history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are indeed heroes around you. You might not always recognize them as such, but they are there. And when we take the time to listen to some of their stories, boy, does it add to our perspective. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in the process, we learn a whole lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and really inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. I know we're going to be today in Dallas, Oregon, with 91-year-old Mel Christie. That's Dallas, Oregon, not Dallas, Texas. I spent some time at the sprawling campus of the Dallas Retirement Village. It's just west of Salem, the state capital. And in the weeks to come, we're going to meet some more vets enjoying life there at DRV, as they call it. But today, we're going to hear from a veteran of the 10th Mountain Division and a recipient of the Bronze Star. But as usual, I want to start before the military ever even entered your mind, Mel. What do you remember about those growing up years in Benton County, Iowa? What was that like, experiencing the Great Depression and everything else?
Yes, it was during the Great Depression. Almost all the farm people were in the same situation. They had nothing. We did have food, of course, because we were on the farm. But there was no money. Very sad. Most of the farmers lost their farms, too. If they hadn't already owned them and had a mortgage on them, of course, the insurance companies and banks foreclosed on them. So everybody was pretty much in the same spot. We were just flat poor. That's what we were like, yes.
What did you guys grow on your farm?
Basically, corn, oats. Back then it was clover hay for feed the farm animals. The farm animals, of course, were cattle, hogs, and my dad still farmed with horses, of course. That was before we had tractors. Goes back quite a few years.
And I bet you had quite a few jobs. What did you have to do around the farm?
Oh, always had to help do the farm chores. I learned to milk cows when I was just a little kid. And of course, even as soon as you're big enough to walk, you got to feed the chickens and so forth and gather the eggs. Little tasks like that. Bring in wood for the stove. Just all kinds of tasks. Everybody had a job on the farm.
I know it's a long time ago, but do you remember what your dreams were? What kind of ambitions you had?
I don't ever recall having any dreams. Just looked forward to going to school and letting happen whatever happened. No, I had never had any plans until the war came along and changed everything. Then, of course, one benefit that came out of the war was that I got to have a university education thanks to the GI Bill. Otherwise, I probably would not have gone beyond high school.
I'm glad you brought that up, because so often we hear about how the war changed everyone's plans, but in your case, even though everything you went through, you got something out of it on the backside. Tell me about December 7th, 1941. I'm guessing you were still in high school, huh?
I had just graduated in May. I was 17 years old when I graduated from high school. We were attending church on Sunday morning, and we came out from church. The man that lived across from church came out all excited, telling us what he'd heard on the radio. And that's when we first heard about Pearl Harbor.
Could you grasp that? Did it make any sense to you, or was it kind of out of this world for you?
Well, it's hard to understand us being attacked by another country, and I've often thought after, what on earth were those people thinking, that they actually thought they could attack a country like us with all the power we had? How on earth did they ever in their wildest imagination think they could pull that off? And of course, we thought right away it was just going to be a little skirmish and it would be over with.
So it didn't occur to you at the time that you might become involved in this?
Oh, no, not really, no. That was far, far out of anything I was thinking about.
When did that change?
Well, when they called from the draft board and said, Uncle Sam has a job for you.
How did you feel about that?
Well, you know, as a young person, it's kind of exciting. You think that you'd get to put on a uniform and march, you know, and all that. Well, yeah, you're going to be kind of proud to be a soldier, yes.
Was there any thought in your mind that you'd rather be in the Navy or the Marine Corps or the Air Corps?
No, I never wanted to be in the Navy because I'm not a big fan of water.
How do you feel about snow?
Snow? Well, I've shoveled a whole lot of it in my lifetime.
I'm sure you got plenty back home in Iowa, and you would see a whole lot in Italy with the 10th Mountain Division. Tell me about how you ended up in the 10th Mountain Division, and were there some moments where you wondered what you got yourself into?
Oh, definitely. Well, I joined them as a replacement. The 10th Mountain Division trained in the Rocky Mountains in snow and bitter cold. I trained on the flatlands of Texas and then was sent to Italy as a replacement. I arrived in Italy about the same time the 10th Mountain Division is, and the first battle they went in, they suffered many, many casualties, and I was one of the ones that was sent into the front to replace the casualties.
And I've talked to a lot of guys in that situation before, whether it was there or at the Bulge or somewhere in the Pacific, and it always fascinates me. Doesn't that occur to you? If I'm a replacement, something bad happened to the guy I'm replacing?
Well, the strange thing about it is, you know, if you had trained with those people, you'd have some buddies. But when they truck you up to the front in the mud and rain at night, you do not know one person. They take you up the front and you dig in a foxhole and in the mud and cold and wet, and you do not know anyone. You don't even know your platoon leader at that point, and it is a very desperate, lost feeling.
I can imagine. And so this is a rifle platoon, and you just described some of the conditions that you're dealing with as far as the weather and the terrain. So when you went to sleep that first night, could you sleep? What was going through your head?
No, not actual sleep. You kind of drift off a little bit, but you get very little rest on the front. It's a situation that's hard to describe. Combat is just different.
And how long did it take for you to be indoctrinated into that new life of combat?
Well, a few short hours, because there's pretty much of a routine on the front in Italy. The German army seemed to have a fixed schedule. Usually about daylight when artillery barrages would start, and then after the artillery barrage, some type of an attack, and you could just pretty much set your watch, if you had one, by what they were going to do. And of course, your best weapon other than your rifle is an entrenching tool, because we spent all of our time digging in the ground. And of course, in the mountains, digging into rocks for protection from the artillery and the small arms fire, anything to protect yourself.
I apologize if this sounds like an obvious or stupid question, but were you afraid? Were you scared?
Oh, definitely scared spitless, because, you know, you're pretty sure you're going to get killed, because the small weapons fire, other than the artillery, of course, is terrible, but the Germans were equipped with lots and lots of automatic weapons, a lot of machine guns and automatic weapons, and of course, it was typical combat. As long as you had yourself dug in the ground and the artillery airbursts didn't get you, why, you might survive another day. But obviously, you're afraid. The one thing I always worried about is, what would my parents think when they got that telegram or whatever the War Department used to notify the parents, what they would think? Because at that time there was censorship. My parents didn't even know where I was and what I was doing. They knew I had gone overseas. They didn't know where I was or what I was doing. But the only word they would ever get from me would be if if something happened to me, they would get a telegram or some kind of a notice that we are sorry to inform you that your son, PFC Melvin L. Christie, you know, and I always worried how that was going to affect them, because my mother especially was very, very concerned about me going. When I left from basic training, visited home, they knew that I was going to be going overseas someplace. They didn't know where. But it basically ruined my mother's health for a period of time, which would be typical of any mother, I'm sure.
I'm sure there's some mothers listening right now that have sons and even daughters that are deployed at the moment that are experiencing something similar. So you were more concerned about your mother than yourself, it sounds like.
Yes, I was. I was concerned about the fact that I could not communicate with my parents because, you know, censorship was such, so we didn't dare to tell them anything. And, of course, we didn't have much to tell them anyhow. The thing I was experiencing, I wouldn't be wanting to tell them about anyhow. So
I'm sure you've heard the expression over the years, and as you talk about some of the fear that you felt, the anxiety for your folks back home, I'm reminded of that expression so many guys have shared, that there are no atheists in foxholes. Is that something that that you experienced?
Yeah, that's very true. I have told many people that I think, you know, you always ask, what makes you think you survived when so many others didn't? You see, I went through combat without even a scratch. And I've always said I gave credit to my mother's prayers for getting me through this situation.
What are some of those moments that you look back on now and you see how close you came and you say, yeah, Mom must have been praying again?
Well, you know, as you move forward, in Italy, we were sent into the toughest situation because the Germans had dug into the North Apennine Mountains. They had all kinds of bunkers built into the side of the hills, and all of these bunkers were equipped with automatic weapons, and we always had to be going uphill against those. Now, there's no way a human being can get up out of a foxhole and walk up a hill against a situation like that, with the air just full of bullets and people dropping here and there. And yet, you go up through that situation, sort of firing your weapon without any specific target, just covering fire, and after the skirmish is all over, you're still alive. How do you explain it? Why me?
I imagine you were in some situations, whether you were advancing like that or in a foxhole, where artillery came pretty close to you.
Very early in my experience, I woke up one morning and found a piece of shrapnel in a foxhole in between, right next to my legs, piece of shrapnel from an artillery burst that was in my foxhole. That's how close I came to getting hit one time.
And unfortunately, I'm sure that if you were in combat in that part of the war for that long, there were days where you found out that someone else was not as fortunate as you were. How did you deal with the losses around you?
Well, you just kind of take it in stride. My good friend, I developed friends, of course. In the infantry, we used a buddy system. There were always two of us paired together. My friend was from Duluth, Minnesota. Swede, we called him, because he was of Swedish heritage. He survived all through the mountains with me. And in the Po Valley, it's just flat as the top of a table. We would go from, they had hedgerows, much like in France. We would hide behind one hedgerow, and then we'd get up and run to the next one. We learned in the infantry, you run and drop and roll, and then you get up and run some more. We were crossing this field of clover hay in the Po Valley, and when I got the other side, why, Swede was not there, so he had been hit apparently by machine gun fire. So that was a great loss, to lose your good buddy. But that's the way it was, just day after day, combat, typical combat.
In 114 days of combat during World War II, the 10th Mountain Division saw more than 4,000 soldiers wounded and approximately 1,000 killed in action. Mel Christie is one of those who survived, and we're going to hear more about his experiences, including what might come across to you as surprising interactions with German soldiers when we come back. To see some photos of Mel, head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this. If you'd like to sell your low-mileage, well-maintained RV in excellent condition, bring it to Paul Everett's RV Country, and they'll sell it for you. That's right. Consignments are welcome. Any type of motorhome, travel trailer, or fifth wheel. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's within driving distance of this radio station. Helping RVers get the most out of their RVs is another one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Paul Everett's RV Country in Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. For the exact locations, go to the website. That address is rvcountry.com. That's rvcountry.com. Over 55 years of experience and 1 million RVers served. Paul Everett's RV Country, proud supporters of Hometown Heroes.
Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Effler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly 250,000 EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 500 World War II veterans have gotten to see their memorial in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328.